You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football. And yes, I know we missed a little bit where we were a day off, but hey, we're here. We are a man short as Randy has been sick on and off. Basically, after Monday, he's gotten this bad cold that he can't really shake, and we didn't do the podcast yesterday because we did the wrestling one first, and we were just so tired. And then I was like, well, let's see if maybe Randy will be good for Friday. And no, he wasn't for that either. But at least Gary is here with me.
Yeah, and thank God healthy. I've missed, like, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 episodes of this show before because I've been sick. And thank God I'm healthy today, and I'm glad to be here. And we have some things to talk about today that are quite interesting when it comes to some changes in the NFL, and of course, you know, these playoff games, which I think all of us are excited about.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we got all these big playoff games now. We're done with the wild card round. The pretenders are done, even though, you know, some of them were very close to being contenders for this round too. Just it happens that way, and we'll talk about those games, but we need to get into discussing all these coaching hires that have happened and coaching stays that have happened. But we need to start, I think, before all of that, with it was announced on, I think it was Wednesday officially, or was it Tuesday night or some Tuesday afternoon? I can't remember exactly when. The city of Los Angeles will have the Rams back in town as Stan Kroenke's palace in Inglewood was chosen over what the Chargers and Raiders were going to offer. Pretty much, he's going to build some ridiculous sports complex that could be perhaps the greatest sports complex ever constructed. That's supposed to be ready in 2019, but the Los Angeles Rams will be moving beginning in May to Los Angeles. You know, so they're not playing their last years in St. Louis. They will play in the Los Angeles Coliseum, where USC, they still play their games there, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yes, where USC plays their games. Once hosted the Olympics, was supposed to host a WrestleMania, one of the WrestleManias, I think it was 7. So just a legendary, like, stadium in our sports vernacular here in the United States. So it's certainly one of these things that it was the team that none of us picked. We had all picked the Raiders and Chargers because we thought, okay, well, if they're going to move anyone, they'll move the California team, so it's not that big a deal. They won't move the St. Louis team and displace them completely. Now, there is a decision to be made for San Diego where they can move if they want to the Los Angeles Stadium, but by all accounts, it seems like they might take Roger Goodell's $100 million offer that will be on the table if nothing is complete with either Oakland or San Diego by 2017 and build themselves a stadium. Perhaps even two stadiums, one for each team. We don't know exactly yet, but the Chargers do have an opportunity to move into that same LA stadium if they want to. So what do you think about this whole thing with the Rams? Obviously, you know, we had Glenn on last week, and he's from the area in St. Louis, and he was very upset at what wound up happening. Do you feel for the St. Louis fans right now, or is this kind of like when the Sonics moved to Oklahoma and they were kind of being pretenders that they cared about their team and only seemed to care once they were leaving?
You know, it's really hard to say. I don't really think the St. Louis fans are pretenders. I think they actually do care about the Rams quite a bit. You know, like you mentioned, Glenn called in and kind of gave his voice from a fan's perspective of the St. Louis Rams. And I think it's a sad day for them. This is a difficult situation for cities when they lose a franchise like this, especially a franchise that won a Super Bowl in that city. It hurts quite a bit. I mean, let's be honest, they still had documentaries over when the Cleveland Browns left and went to Baltimore. You know, they claimed that they left in the night. And they were gone, and it hurt so bad, and it did. And they were lucky enough to find a way to get a franchise back, you know, not the original, but they, you know, kind of rebuilt and brought the Browns back. That was great. And, you know, with the Rams in L.A., I mean, it's not like St. Louis can do anything about that, especially with the Rams' name being in L.A. You can't just recreate that. So that's a sad, sad situation. And I really feel for all the St. Louis fans. I really do. And to me personally, I still stand by my statement. I wish the NFL would have granted the Oakland Raiders and San Diego Chargers that opportunity, not so much the Rams. I just think that the Rams, they have a good enough fan base that they can be supported by the St. Louis area, in Missouri in general, because, you know, there's plenty of other people coming in from out of the woodwork and, you know, Missouri to come see the Rams play. And this is just a difficult day for all of them. And, you know, LA is going to get, you know, at least one team we know right now, two, maybe possibly in the near future. But let's see if they can support them. That's my thing about this whole thing. Is LA going to support them? Because if they don't win, I mean, we may be seeing this beautiful, beautiful stadium, you know, 1/4 full if the teams aren't winning.
Yeah, I don't, I agree with you. Obviously, you know, LA is very, they're also, you know, they've just got them into being a hockey town when the Kings were winning. They've always been a basketball city with the Lakers, you know, so, and they're big in soccer as well with the Galaxy having won so many times. You know, football's been gone for a long time, and to all of a sudden bring it back, and they're gonna just flock to it. Obviously, you know, once that stadium is there, that's gonna bring in a huge boom, just like it has for AT&T Stadium, for all these other stadiums. It's going to be something that people are gonna want to go to because it's new, and people are going to just be in awe of it. Obviously, and all the other sporting events that will obviously take place there at some point or another, you know, just, I think they don't have to worry about that for the first maybe couple of years, but let's say that they go on a while where they lose, I think you do have to worry about that. But I think that especially if the Rams are able to just be, and I think this is what's going to wind up happening, I think it's going to wind up being one team. I think San Diego seems to be okay with, I don't know what they wanted to move necessarily. I think that was one of those things that people just thought was going to happen because it was obvious that San Diego had a problem with fans not coming to the game. That was the whole thing this season, right? Every time we talked about the Chargers, what did we discuss? That it seemed like there was more Chargers fans, or not more of the other team's fans at that game than there was Chargers fans.
Uh-huh.
And you have to wonder now, maybe they'll come back now that they know that they won't be leaving, at least for this next season. You know, I just don't see a situation where I think Stan Kroenke, he only did the partner thing because he'll get more revenue. It'll all go to him, you know, and mm-hmm. and it's also the NFL, obviously, kind of putting their hand in there and saying, hey, you know, will you kind of do this offer for one of these teams? We know you don't want to do it, but what do you think? Do you think one of them go, or you think it's just going to be the Rams only there?
You know, there's a great possibility it could be just the Rams, but, you know, in my opinion, I think that one of these teams is going to go over there and join the Rams. And this is the really honest reason why. I just mentioned the fact that if there ever becomes a losing situation for the Rams, they're going to need another team that possibly could be in the hunt. And so if you put another team in there, and a team like the San Diego Chargers, or even, heck, the Oakland Raiders are on the rise, if you ask me personally, put them in there and put them in the mix. And, hey, if one's not winning, at least you got somebody filling up the stadium. So that's the way I kind of view it. Now, in my personal opinion, I would love it just to be the Rams. That would be the way I'd go. I'm not even happy about the Rams being there, but if there's going to be a situation where the Rams are stuck there, which they are now, let's just live with them. Let's let them enjoy the city. And, you know, these other parts of California deserve teams too. That's the only thing. I'm not a big fan of doubling them up. I get why the New York Giants and New York Jets are right there on top of each other. It makes a lot of sense because it's history. They've been there forever. But it doesn't make sense.
They did it
with
the previous stadium. They did it with the new stadium, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, but these other cities don't need to double up these teams. It doesn't need to be done.
Yeah, I mean, and we do have, obviously, many teams that are very close in proximity to each other, you know. And, mm-hmm. and to be honest, like, I think a lot of people kept saying that there was fans for San Diego and L.A., and that's not the case. Most of San Diego's fans do live in that area. So, you know, just I think that it's a fallacy that people were kind of making up. You know, there was obviously more Raiders fans than there was Chargers fans. And it's just, I think they want to keep that team in Oakland. You know, you got Golden State over there, the Warriors that are doing just fine for basketball. You know, you got the baseball stadium that's obviously it's a baseball stadium that they share with the A's, you know. So you don't want to, I don't know what they want to displace the Raiders either. I mean, they've been mm-hmm. in Oakland for a very long time now too, so. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what if this improves the Rams at all, if it gives everybody else getting hyped. I mean, we've seen the pressure that can get you under. I mean, you know, the Cowboys went through that as well with that opening that stadium in 2009. So, I mean, it's certainly not something that automatic it's going to just all of a sudden that team is going to be better because they have that stadium. It takes more than that, obviously.
So. Yeah, exactly, and I agree. And, you know, the one that Kroenke and the rest of the Rams organization may need to really realize is, you know, this is a major market. I mean, this is the second largest market in the entire U.S., and that's going to be an issue if they're not winning. It's going to be an issue when it comes to distractions and other, you know, situations when it comes to media. And I hope they understand that. I hope they're prepared for that, because if they're not, I mean, L.A. will eat them up. I mean, that is not a city you're just going to waltz in and halfway do it. You're going to have to be on your game all the time. You're not going to be able to deal with these local media conglomerates that are, you know, the size of a dime. You're dealing with, you know, full size dollar bill news organizations and agencies with you. You're not dealing with the local, because, you know, in Missouri you can get away with some things, but in LA you're not going to be able to get away with very much.
Oh, you're right. That's another thing they have to deal with. This is all the stuff with the media and everything. So, yeah. Well, I mean, I think we had a pretty good discussion about this, so we can now move on to talking about the coaches. And we know Jeff Fisher stayed there, so they didn't have to go find another coach. And the Chargers kept Mike McCoy. So that didn't suffer, you know, that team didn't suffer casualty because they did not go to L.A. In fact, they stayed with who they've had for a little bit. And, in fact, they even got somebody back as well. Ken Wisenhunt, who left after the 2013 season to go coach the Tennessee Titans. He was fired during the season, of course. Michael Larkey is now the interim coach, and he looks like he's going to be the one coach that's going to stay and just be given the coaching job there. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But they keep Mike McCoy. They bring Ken Whisenhunt in to be an offensive coordinator with a quarterback like Phillip Rivers. He doesn't have to, you know, work magic on someone that, you know, like a Mariota who was still learning how to get into the NFL system and everything. Do you think that this all works out? Do we see an improvement in the Chargers next year? I mean, considering, you know, Melvin Gordon should, I know, you know, he's now has a year of experience in the league. You'd hope Keenan Allen does not have his a crazy year of injuries. You know, you got Antonio Gates back, all that stuff. I mean, they were one of the bigger, you know, leading offenses in the league until all his receivers seemed to go down with injuries. What do you does this really help the Chargers here to have stability again?
I think that, you know, it could be for sure. And it's just because Winston Hunt is so good at, you know, making sure his offense runs smoothly. He's a guy that you can depend on when it comes to making the scheme work around the quarterback. And, you know, he was just getting a chance and getting his feet wet with Marcus Mariota. And, you know, the speed that he was let go did not help that situation at all. It did not help him. I really personally don't feel like that, you know, you can stamp his name on Mariota at all because of the fact that he has such a short period to work with him. We've seen the success that him and Phillip Rivers have had together, and that's a positive, and I think they can rekindle that to some extent. You know, it's going to depend on some of those things you talked about, Sean. You know, injuries are always a killer. Sometimes you can't get over those things, and you can't, you know, blame the coach. You just got to deal with the injuries that came with your team that year. But I think Winston Hunt's a great guy, and I think it's a good addition or re-addition, however you want to say it, for the San Diego Chargers in that offense.
Yes, certainly. And we'll have to, obviously, we'll be talking about all these teams. When we get done with this, the playoffs here, we're going to go. That's why we won't necessarily talk in depth about who Chip Kelly or any of these coaches might look at in the drafts quarterback wise or anything, because we're going to go through that. We're going to do our best to, because last year we kind of picked it up pretty much at the draft, and that's when we kind of decided, okay, we're going to take this show in a different direction where we're going to make it a big football focus and all that stuff. And so this year we finally get a whole off season where we're talking about all these things that are going on and continuing to talk about things that are certainly going on. The Cleveland Browns have named former Bengals offensive coordinator and former Raiders coach for a season, Hugh Jackson, as their head coach. In fact, the owner, Jim Haslett, he actually didn't go to that meeting where they voted for the Rams because he wanted to make sure that he signed the guy he wanted. And that was Hugh Jackson, who had interest from the Giants. He had interest from other teams. In fact, even Marvin Lewis tried to tell him that, hey, you'll succeed me as coach if you stay at the Bengals. That's how much he was valued there. And so now he goes to the Browns. The big thing that he has said is he does not want Johnny Manziel in Cleveland. So you know he's going somewhere. It's just a matter of how and when. But how, it seems like there's a mixed reaction, but obviously, you know, Twitter, you really can't take a whole lot of, because it seems to be just a sea of people just always being negative. How do you feel if you're a Browns fan today knowing you got a guy like Hugh Jackson as your coach now?
I think you feel pretty good. I think you feel like that, hey, you've got a lot of potential now because you've got a guy a lot of the people in the league wanted. Heck, the team he left wanted him. And that's a big, you know, exciting point for me if I'm a Browns fan, because I know that this guy is highly touted for a reason. He's a smart guy. He's done a lot with the Cincinnati Bengals offense. You know, they've added a lot of talent, but they've also done a lot of great things with some of the talent that has not been major. And so that excites you. I think he's a really intelligent guy. You know, he's had experience as a head coach, despite the fact that it was a very short tenure. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a potential thing. It's not really a promise. I think you're still going to have to evaluate him
more as this year continues. But for right now, at the point we're sitting here, I think it's exciting.
I certainly think it's exciting, too. I mean, that coaching job that he had with Oakland was – that team wasn't that good, let's be honest. That team was bad. And then he's gone in and he's helped – he started as different – he had different jobs with the Bengals at first. And then he became the offensive coordinator. He's helped Andy Dalton, you know. So they're looking at that and they're saying, okay – not Manziel, but perhaps in the draft, or perhaps, you know, I don't know what veterans are going to be out there. We'll have to discuss that again when we get to the free agency part. Do they go sign somebody, or do they look at somebody in the draft and say, okay, this is going to be our guy? They do have the number two pick in the draft. So, I mean, and there's some decent quarterbacks, so we'll have to see. We'll definitely have to see what they decide to do on that front. But obviously, as has been proven in this league so many times, if you don't have a good quarterback, unless you have one of those Donovan defenses in the entire history of the NFL, you're not going anywhere. So it all starts there.
Definitely. And the one thing that I love about this is that, you know, Jackson basically said, I'm not signing on that dotted line until I see you guys are going to promise me Menzel's gone. That speaks a lot for the coach. He wants stability when he walks in the door. That speaks a lot for what Johnny Manziel has put himself in.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's so, I mean, you have to wonder how bad is it that your new coach comes in and says, nope. Not having you on my team. But a guy that, you know, the Eagles said they didn't want him on his team, on their team, has found a marriage with a guy, another guy that wasn't wanted by his team, and now perhaps they will be a coach and quarterback duo in San Francisco as Chip Kelly, the new San Francisco 49er head coach. Oh, and I forgot to mention that Hugh Jackson was given significant personnel. He will be making a lot of the personnel decisions. So that's why he chose the Browns job over perhaps some of these other jobs that he hadn't interviewed for yet, because he knew he would get a lot of say-so with the Browns. And I think that will, you know, come to pass, see if that's important. But that this has also been a Browns front office that has made bad decisions, obviously Manziel being one of them. So, but again, moving on after that little tangent, you got Chip Kelly. We know, we have said this many times, and we're not the only ones, obviously. His offense works heck of a lot better when you have a running quarterback. Colin Kaepernick, that's what he does. He does it. He runs even better than he passes. Think this means Colin Kaepernick stays?
I definitely think so, and I think a lot of the people, you know, that know about, you know, Kaepernick and know about Chip Kelly think that this is a marriage made in heaven, because it's exactly what you said, Sean. This is Chip Kelly's type of quarterback. They think that they can get a lot out of Kaepernick using this system, and so I think it is a win-win for both. And I think, you know, that this is definitely going to be the guy in San Francisco once again.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be interesting because, you know, Blaine Gabbert didn't do too bad for himself. I mean, obviously he had games where he did not look good. But, you know, Colin Kaepernick had many more of those, and that's why he was benched. You know, that also doesn't mean that it's a guarantee. There could be guys that Chip Kelly looks at in the draft and says, I want him. You know, this is a defense that is going to have to be built upon as well. You know, and that's a significant issue for Chip Kelly, because your defense stays on the field a lot for his coach. As, you know, the Cowboys will be playing the 49ers next year, so I guess it's fine for me to say that, you know, as Mickey Spagnuolo likes to say, you know, it's the hurry up and get off the field offense. So, because, like, that's what you're doing a lot of times is you're going so quick that you wind up getting off the field. So you have to wonder if that's going to be a staple of the 49ers version of it, if Colin Kaepernick improves, if that defense is going to improve. And that's going to be very interesting. But they have nice pieces. You know, Carlos Hyde, he can come back healthy. You know, you got a running game, which is what you want there. We'll have to see, again, what he decides to add. But speaking of the Eagles, even though they cannot make this one official because Doug Peterson is still coaching a playoff team, the Kansas City offensive coordinator Doug Peterson, a former longtime backup for Brett Favre, and also I think he played a whole year for, I can't remember which team, and I might have been actually the
I think
Patriots.
It was the
Eagles. Oh, no, it was it was for the Eagles.
Yeah,
Donovan
so.
McNabb, when he was hurt in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently he's been picked as the coach for the Eagles now. And hey, I mean, this is one of those that I think not a lot of people were talking about, but certainly going to be interesting because we've seen what Kansas City's offense has been able to do, especially when you have a quarterback like Alex Smith doesn't make mistakes. Something Sam Bradford is, you know, he's very prone to do. So, I mean, do you think this means maybe Sam Bradford's out in Philadelphia and we're looking at them bringing somebody else in, or do you think he tries to work with Bradford?
You know what? I think it's going to be a true quarterback competition this summer. I really do. I think he's going to do a little bit of both. I think, you know, you could definitely see them reach out and see if they can make any kind of, you know, maybe another trade, or they're going to reach out and see who's going to be available, you know, coming up. And, you know, you can never put out the draft out of your mind because, you know, teams like to find gems, and they like to find those gems that are in the draft in the fifth or fourth round that they can get and try to make a franchise quarterback out of. So you could see Sam Bradford working out a little bit here and there, and you, of course, mix in some of these other guys, either free agents or rookies. I just don't know if we're sold that Bradford is going to be the guy. You know, it's a new head coach. This is not Chip Kelly. This is a new coach. You know, he didn't sign Bradford on, so until he sees what he wants out of Bradford and the rest of the people he brings in, we're really not going to know.
Now, what does it say about the Eagles? You fire Andy Reid, and you bring a guy that's been coaching with Andy Reid and has coached with Andy Reid before Andy Reid left Philadelphia.
You know, what's funny is that, you know, Andy Reid had a lot of success in Philadelphia. Yes, in the end, you know, yes, you know, he didn't do so hot. But for all the success they've had, to me, that makes a lot of sense why they got a guy like this. They know him very well. They know the way he coaches. They know the system that he runs. I think that they're trying to rekindle some of that, you know, past glory maybe, and see if they can get anything out of it being an Andy Reid guy. Like I said, I mean, they're very familiar with what they could have.
And it's going to be a West Coast offense too, so that's not something Sam Bradford is very accustomed to either. But, you know, quarterbacks, you're paid a lot of money, you got to learn things. Speaking of learning things, Ben McAdoo is going to have to learn to now be a coach, as he is promoted from offensive coordinator to the head coach of the New York Giants, Gary. And Steve Spagnuolo is going to stay on as defensive coordinator, one of the worst defenses in the entire league this year. In fact, one of the worst, the worst against the pass was Steve Spagnuolo's New York Giants. Of course, they did have quite a few injuries, one being to the hand of Jason Pierre-Paul. McAdoo's being referred to as a young Andy Reid, an outstanding young coach who has great experience and has done a good job as our offensive coordinator the past 2 years, said owner John Mara. Of course, isn't it a little weird that you let go of Tom Coughlin, who has not been given a job yet? Even Joe Philbin got an offensive line head coaching job, or offensive line coach job somewhere. I can't remember exactly where right now. That you keep your defensive coordinator, you promote your offensive coordinator, who also Eli Manning kind of tipped him as he kind of wanted him so that they didn't have to change the offense or anything. you say goodbye to the Coughlin, but you keep everybody else? What is this really the best idea here?
You know, I mean, to their credit, they, like, you know, we just talked about the Eagles. They know this guy. McAdoo is a guy that they've watched for a while, and I think that they feel like that he's got young leadership. He's a guy that maybe can give them a spark. And I think they feel like that, you know, there's enough credibility behind his name that he can do the job and get enough respect from his players. And, you know, it always helps when players are familiar with their coaches. It really does. These guys aren't going to have to change anything coming into this season. They're not going to have to worry about finding out, you know, that they've got 85 new plays that they got to put into place, and then, of course, find a new scheme that they've never found before. So that's all these positive things that they want to see. You know, players love to be, you know, in a system that they've, you know, had a chance to experience for multiple years. And so I think that this helps McAdoo for sure. I think it also, you know, once again, it helps the fact that this ownership group, this owners are really familiar with McAdoo. And that's exciting for them, I think. I think a lot of Giants fans are probably pretty happy because they know this guy well, and I think they have a lot of potential.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. You didn't get Hugh Jackson, but, I mean, who else was really out there that you're going to go, okay, I mean, well, let's go hire that guy? Other than trying to go find somebody from college or whatever, and we've seen how well that works out for a lot of, you know, most of the time. I mean, there really wasn't anybody when you go back to think about it. Are you going to bring Chip Kelly in there? No. You know, that does not work at all for Eli Manning and the Giants. You know, Hugh Jackson was probably your only other guy that you were possibly really considering. And he didn't come. So I think they kind of just went with the best they had, and that was to promote him. So we'll have to see if it pans out. And if anything, Steve Spagnuolo, who also failed as the Rams coach, you can just let him go if things go sour again for the defense and you bring somebody else. And I think that's the move that I think is going to make them look bad when we're talking about that this season coming up. So we're not done yet, as there was another promotion, and we talked about this the last time we had a podcast, that it was pretty much known Dirk Cutter was going to be the Buccaneers head coach, and they made it official. Cutter, of course, was a 6 years. He was the coach for Arizona State. He was the offensive coordinator for the Jaguars and the Atlanta Falcons under their new defensive coordinator, Mike Smith. Of course, the longtime Falcons head coach who was fired last year, did not coach at all in 2015. And he comes back to do a job that he's very well known for doing with the Jaguars and with the Falcons. So these are two guys that know each other. And it should work well here for Tampa Bay. And this is also the offensive coordinator now coach that helped Jameis Winston get 4,000 yards this season. I mean, seems like things only should go up from here, right?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, once again, familiarity works a lot in this league. And, you know, players are able to stay in the same system, especially Jameis Winston. You just mentioned his name, and I think he's going to be a very important component to this, being the fact that he has the opportunity to come in for a second year and have the same system working for him and him learning more about it. I think that's a very positive light for him. And I think it also gives the organization a great chance to win. But, you know, I think a lot of teams this offseason are kind of smartened up to that. I mean, you know, if it's, you know, not a coach that's in-house, it's a coach that's been in the organization before. And you're right, Sean, there is no huge names. You know, Sean Payton even has not, you know, had anything beyond, you know, rumors. And a few other coaches that are out there really are not interested unless, you know, they already have a job right now. So that's another thing. No big names, just these guys that are young. But you know what? The league sometimes needs those guys.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Mike Smith gets put back in a position where he was much better He's not having to make these overarching decisions that affect not only his defense but also the offense, and then just making these bad game management decisions that he made as a Falcons coach. And I think now he gets to just focus on what he's good at. And that will make the Buccaneers defense better, who have some nice key pieces in a Gerald McCoy, in a Levante David. Maybe he can turn Werner around. I don't know if, you know, that's going to be the case, but it's certainly going to be interesting to see if the Bucs defense, which was sort of the problem a little bit, and, you know, it creates an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is definitely going to be a plus for the Bucs going forward here. And one thing I forgot to talk about when we were talking about staying coaches, Jim Caldwell stays as the Detroit Lions coach. We kind of talked about this as well, that, you know, the ownership liked him. The new GM, it seemed like, might put a little bit of a tizzy in that, but he did not. They kept him. And, I mean, now we saw what the Lions looked like towards the end of the season there with, you know, Jim Bob Cooter, offensive coordinator. All that, the defense seemed to play much better as well. Should you look at things positively now for the Lions with Caldwell back?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Caldwell being back should give them an opportunity to kind of capitalize on what they were starting to do at the end of the season. And their season was very, very rugged at the beginning. They were having tons of struggles, but at the end, when they changed their offensive coordinator, it gave that team a spark. They kind of found themselves a little bit. And I think, you know, this year, with him having an opportunity to use that same offense, the same offensive coordinator, and just hit the ground running, you know, Caldwell definitely deserves it. And he deserves a chance at getting the team to where they think they can be based on what the end of the season looked like for the Lions. But, you know, to me personally, I never thought he did that bad of a job. So it was a shock when they were all thinking about getting rid of this guy. I think Caldwell does a pretty good job with the Lions.
Agree with you completely there. I didn't think that they needed to really remove Jim Caldwell. The Lions had been playing better, and that's kind of what you want from them at this point. So that's pretty much it, I think, as far as the coaches, and we talked about the Rams thing, so I think that pretty much covers, as far as the news that doesn't relate to games. Adam Pac-Man Jones did get fined almost $30,000. A lot of players were fined. Joey Porter was fined $10,000. I think there was even a lineman for the Steelers that was fined about $13,000 for a leg whip. I mean, just lots of stuff happening.
Yeah.
With that game and everything. So, you know, it's certainly going to be interesting to see what the, you know, you got Vontaze Burfict missing the first three games of the season next year. So then this is going to be a fun ride to see if, you know, they bring back Adam Jones or not, which it seems to indicate that he's probably not coming back. And I do want to give a condolence, our condolences out there to, I think you can say it, a legendary journalist and investigative, I don't know what you call those, insiders, for ESPN and Chris Mortensen, who looks like they found out today he has stage 4. I think he had the cancer before. It went in remission, and then all of a sudden it's come back. And now he's at stage 4, and it's just, it's sad. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up with him, and he was always that guy that got you the scoops. And, I mean, obviously Adam Schefter's kind of overtaken a lot of that, but he still gets you one here and there. They work together. I mean, how do you feel about this?
Just sad news. You never want to hear this. You know, this is a tough situation no matter what, you know, what you're talking about. If you're talking about a family member, you're talking about a close friend, or you're just talking about somebody out there in the world, you know, of media, TV, you know, movie stars, athletes, all these affect people. we've seen how it's affected people over time. And hey, you know, Stuart Scott and his passing really just really affected the masses. People miss him, especially his colleagues and people that were around him really, you know, loved the guy. I think the same way probably goes for Mortensen. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that really respect him. And like you said, Sean, you grow up watching guys like this and just really respecting what they do. And to see him go, you know, in the near future is not something you want to hear. You want to hear that they fixed it and know he's going to be around for a lot longer. And, you know, best wishes to him. I really hope that he, you know, gets to live a long, productive life and hopefully things change for him. But, you know, this is just not good news. I hate to hear that.
Yeah, I hope, you know, hopefully he can get good news, like you said, and we'll be hearing great things that happened for him and everything. But I guess we should go ahead and move on to talking about these divisional round playoff games that are happening on Saturday and Sunday, or later today, or maybe they already happen by the time you get to listen to this, but there'll still be some games on Sunday for you to listen to this podcast for. The first game on Saturday will be the Kansas City Chiefs traveling to Gillette Stadium to face what's supposed to be a much healthier New England Patriots team. You've got big Jamie Collins and Sebastian Vollmer, I think, is one of the guys that's still kind of iffy. One of the other guys is iffy is Gronk. He's kind of missed some practice time, but he's expected to play. And they're getting Julian Edelman back, which is huge for that offense, especially one that is missing their top two running backs and everything. You've got Kansas City on the other side, who's gotten Spencer Ware and Jeremy Maclin questionable. You know, Maclin went down with that big injury, and Tom Mahali, who did not play that much in the previous game against the Texans. Of course, he really didn't have to at that point when the other team's just not doing anything, and Justin Houston as well is a little banged up. So, you know, some of your key defensive players and key offensive players for the Chiefs, a little banged up there. I mean, how do you see this going? I mean, we do need to remember that these two teams, when they played each other last year, this was the game when the Chiefs routed the Patriots that basically led to that, the Patriots just going crazy and wound up winning the Super Bowl. So, you know, they have history with each other, but also Belichick could be playing some mind games as well, going on record saying he didn't know really how to beat this Kansas City Chiefs team. What are you thinking here for this matchup?
You know, I think that this is going to be a tight race the entire game. I look at the fact that the New England Patriots are a lot healthier. You just mentioned that, Sean, and getting Edelman back is a big plus for Tom Brady. I think he's going to be more comfortable now. I think he has one of his major targets right there and available for him. It'll also help Gronk, you know, get open and do a few things, even though he's a little bit banged up himself. So I think, you know, overall, though, it would be a close race. I really feel like, you know, the Kansas City is possibly, you know, the better defense. I think that's for sure. Offensively, I can't say that. I think, you know, they've been fine. But I really don't think Kansas City offensively is any better than Tom Brady's offense. I just think that they've had plenty of weapons, even though they've had some guys out. And so, when I look at this, I just, to be honest, I'm going to come down on a side only because I think that one side is a little healthier, and I think that's going to probably run into where we're going to talk about success.
You know, I think with the Patriots, it's just they're at home. I mean, yes, the Broncos beat them there, but that was also a very, very banged up. You know, that's when Gronk went out and all that kind of stuff happened. It just, man, to me, the Patriots losing at home is one of those things that does not happen very often. You've got Tom Brady as your quarterback. Yes, Alex Smith doesn't make that many mistakes, but he, you know, can make some. And this is a Patriots defense that if they have a lot of their guys back, they're formidable. You know, this could be much more of a battle of the defenses. And, you know, Tom Brady did get sacked a ton this year. I think 38 sacks was the number for him. A offensive line that has had about 13 different looks this season. It looks like it's going to be another one again for this game. That's going to be the big question. Can they protect Brady?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will be the outlying factor when you look at it for if the Chiefs win this game. If they get to them, if they get that 3.2 sacks per game that they've been getting during this big 11-game win streak, I think you're looking at a Chiefs team that's really going to be competing, and it could go down to the wire, certainly. But I don't know. It's just I think Julian Edelman being back is, like you said, so big, because not only is he another outlet for Tom Brady in the passing game that he trusts and knows, Edelman can go underneath, and he can almost be like a sort of a running back for you that you don't have. You know, he can go out there in the flat and get you some yards. He can go underneath, and like it's one of these quick throws, and he turns and then starts jetting upfield before you even know what you're gonna do. You know, so, and as you said, for open space for Gronk to be available more for Brady, you know, it makes LaFell better. So I think definitely this is going to be interesting for this game and what the Chiefs defense does.
So, I mean, you know, if we got to predict this thing, you know, for me personally, I got to go with the New England Patriots. And it's not because I don't believe in the Kansas City Chiefs. I just look at those components of Edelman being back, the offensive line getting back a guy that they really sorely missed, and of course, you know, Tom Brady being used to playing in these type of games. I really feel like he's going to have the composure to help get the Patriots over the hump, even if it is, you know, between kicking field goals, you know. And that's fine and dandy. As long as Tom Brady gets his chance, he's going to make sure that everybody else has to feel his wrath, because he doesn't lose very often.
No, he doesn't. I'm going to have to go with you with the Patriots winning this game, I think. It's just, I think the Patriots at one point or another, they're going to take control in the time that matters in that fourth quarter, and, you know, they're not going to give a chance for the Chiefs to look back at all. And if anything, if I'm needing somebody to make one big comeback, I'm counting on Tom Brady. So let's go on to the second game on Saturday, Green Bay Packers, again visiting the Arizona Cardinals. We saw what this game was, a total slacking by the Arizona Cardinals. I raveled this game. It was amazing how bad Aaron Rodgers looked, how much he was getting pressured. Obviously, his offensive line much healthier this time around. It might even include David Bakhtiari at left tackle, but my goodness, it's just, this team blitzes so much. This team gets at you. This is a team that Patrick Peterson leads the league in passer rating against with under 50%. And we're talking about a James Jones that has issues getting open. This entire team has issues getting open. No Davante Adams for this game. They can stop the run, can the Cardinals defense. I mean, just on the defensive side, this could be another takedown, because the defense was so good in that game, Gary, Carson Palmer really didn't have to do a whole lot. And, you know, Carson Palmer, although he has not won a playoff game ever, he's got weapons every part of the field, and David Johnson as well. I mean, just, it seems like it's just one of these where it could just be too overwhelming again for the Packers. Or do you think that what you saw in the Redskins game gives you a little bit of hope if you're a Packers fan?
You know, I think you have that hope, but I don't believe it's reality. I really do feel like the Cardinals are a better team than the Packers. I think the Packers are not going to get blown out like we saw that other game. That other game was just a sad showing, and I don't believe any of the Packers showing up for this game are going to, you know, lay down or play with less heart. I think that game is going to be a fixture in their locker room, and I think they're going to say, hey, we're better than this, and we're going to build on it. And I think that's what their focus has been all week long. So I think it's going to be interesting. It'll be a good game. I really think it will be. It will be close the whole way through. I don't know that. I really do feel like the Cardinals will pull away with it, even though they'll, you know, score maybe one to two touchdowns on defense, using other methods to do it. And, you know, but, you know, what it's going to come down to really is just seeing how Aaron Rodgers can stay stable. And if he can, they have a good shot. But just to me personally, I haven't seen the proof in the pudding, and I think the Cardinals are going to get to Rodgers and they're going to lose this game.
I think the one thing, if you're the Packers, you know what you have with Clay Matthews, and also, you know, you rush some guys. Don't know if you're going to get Sam Shields back or not from the concussion, but it looks like he might play. If you can get some of those blitzes to work, we have seen Carson Palmer be a little bit of a loosey-goosey with the football. If he gets sacked, he'll fumble. And then it's up to your defense to recover that. And it might be one of those where whoever gets the last turnover, whoever gets the most turnovers, and you know, whoever makes that key play at the right moment, it could be that the Packers might have a chance. But I think, again, for you, what you said is the most important thing. They've had a huge issue all year keeping Aaron Rodgers upright. And, man, with what they have in the, you know, on that defense, it's just hard for me to see that happening here. But that was the thing, too. Rodgers made so many. He had interceptions. He had fumbles. I mean, you can't imagine he's going to have a game like that again. But you never know.
Yeah, you know. And, you know, I don't want to ever, you know, put out the fact that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is experienced and he knows what he's doing. It's just the fact that I just, man, right now the Arizona Cardinals are a better team. They did get their butts whipped in, you know, week 17, but you know, we could make up all these excuses or do what we want to do with that. But I just think, you know, bottom line is I think the Arizona Cardinals are hungry and I think they're ready. And that spells bad news for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, certainly. And I'm going to pick the Cardinals for this one as well. So we move on to a fantastic game, a rematch, week five, when the Carolina Panthers went on that final drive and a 26-yard touchdown by Greg Olsen won them the game 27-23, the first time that everybody kept saying, okay, Panthers might be for real now. And they certainly proved that 15-1 on the season. They now go in and play the number one scoring defense, but they are the number one scoring offense. They put up about 31 points a game. However, one of their big keys, Ted Ginn Jr., may not play in this game. And even though Ted Ginn didn't have the greatest of games against Seattle the first time, I think you can kind of say that after the Seattle games when Ted Ginn really started to take off, it was still the Greg Olsen show when this game was happening. If Ted Ginn does play, I think it gives a different dynamic for the Panthers that they did not have in that first game against each other. And obviously, you know, Russell Wilson, he's been fantastic as well. With the Seahawks, you know, Doug Baldwin, all that stuff going on. Marshawn Lynch may play. Not totally sure. That's probably going to be one of those they'll make a decision right at the end there. But, I mean, this seems like two teams that are very similar to each other. What do you feel is that key that separates them? Is there one at all? Gary?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I have a mute on for some reason. yeah, so I mean, I look at this and I'm, you know, kind of re-go over what I was just talking about. Seattle is a team that I think has revitalized themselves here, and I think they are going to give the Carolina Panthers a run for their money. I think that, you know, this is going to be a very different game than what we saw in the past, and I just think that, you know, we're going to see Russell Wilson play a really, you know, up and down game, personally. I think he's going to have some success here and there. But I also think that the Carolina Panthers defense is good enough to you know, stop all his antics and, you know, keep him from rolling out too much. I think they're going to really get in his face at times, and it's going to affect him. I think Cam Newton's going to have to deal with the same thing, though, too. I think the Seattle defense is going to be blitzing like, you know, crazy, trying to get to Cam. I think they're going to try to find any way they can to get him rushed and confused and making sure that they keep their corners tight because, you know, let's be honest, this Carolina team has been going with receivers that are not really great grand receivers. Ted Ginn Jr., decent receiver, but not a superstar. Let's be honest with ourselves.
He's played much, much better with Cam Newton.
Yes. He definitely has. Definitely has. But, like, you know, when you're talking about guys like Sherman lining up against Ted Ginn Jr., that doesn't speak well, if you ask me, to what's going to be happening in that matchup. So I think both quarterbacks are going to have tough situations going into this game. I do think that, you know, we're going to see a very, very close one. This could be a very defensive game. I mean, we may be talking about another field goal war like we saw between Seattle and Minnesota, which, you know, if it happens,
and
it happens.
They have had plenty of those games in their history recently, Carolina and Seattle.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
If I'm not mistaken, they had like a 13-9 game or something. It was ridiculous. It was.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I mean, it's gonna be interesting. This is one of the games I'm really, really looking forward to because I think this is gonna be a true matchup, a true battle, and it's gonna be fun to watch.
I think two more things to think about too. Seattle has been bad against tight ends this season, especially when they play winning teams and their tight ends. Remember, Tyler Eifert went off on them. Greg Olsen the first time. Obviously, they're going to try to key on him, but Greg Olsen's not one of these guys that he's just so simple to stop. Mm-hmm. So Cam Newton's going to be looking for him, but again, this is why him expanding and making these receivers better. You know, Jonathan Stewart's obviously been playing better than he did the first time they were playing each other. That's another key factor in this, but Jericho Cotchery, whether Tidgin plays or not, for some reason I can't think of the other receiver for the Panthers right now. I know they have another one they've stepped up and they've done what they need to do and get better. And on the other side, Bobby Wagner didn't play in the first game, and he's basically their Luke Kuechly, and he is going to be making the calls as to whether or not running, passing, what are they doing. That's going to be very interesting. Which of those key guys has the better game and leads their defense to make bigger plays, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that's something that both of these teams rely on a lot, is making those big plays. This is a tough one. Obviously, if you're the Panthers, man, you get the number one seed and you get this. How mad are you right now?
It's going to be a difficult matchup for them for sure, and I agree. But, you know, the one thing I'm going to go with is that I really feel like that the Carolina Panthers have something going this year. I think they've got a lot of potential, at least when it comes to the playoff, you know, run. And I think Seattle's great and dandy, but my problem is I think sometimes they do lack in certain areas in their offense. If, you know, Russell Wilson is, you know, taken down because of the fact that they're not allowing him to get to the outside too many times, that could spell disaster for them. So I'm looking at, you know, the possibility of, you know, Cam Newton having a better game, which wins the Carolina Panthers the game.
We'll say Cam Newton as well. And me and Gary and I had the same Super Bowl pick, so you know we're going to have the same picks here. But it's still, this is going to be a fascinating game. And another game that might be either really bad or very competitive, depending on the defenses. Rather, so many interesting subplots here with this Pittsburgh Steelers going into Mile High. A game that obviously the Steelers won, not too long ago. I was a different quarterback now. Peyton Manning is back as the Broncos quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger isn't healthy, but he's going to play. The problem is he's not going to have Antonio Brown. He is out thanks to that hit from Vontaze Burfict. No D'Angelo Williams either. So you've got the putrid running game going for you, which that's not going to help you at all with this Denver defense. You're going to be one-dimensional without your star receiver. Oh, boy. I don't know. And that Pittsburgh defense, they're allowing about 272 yards per game this season through the air. Now, again, this is a Peyton Manning-led Broncos team that, you know, through the air, he's had his issues this year, leads the league still in interceptions. I mean, and he had so many of those games where he didn't play at all. What do you see as the key here for the Broncos is it defensively or is it on the offensive side?
I think really honestly it comes down to offense because, you know, we've seen the fact that, you know, Peyton Manning is going to be the guy in this game. And so that brings up a lot of questions of, you know, is he going to be able to get the ball out? Is he going to be able to throw like he once did as a younger guy? And is he going to be able to lead this team to a victory? Those are all big questions. And, you know, you can go on defense as well and answer a few other questions. But I think this comes down to that, you know, really on the Steelers, on their side of the ball, they're banged up. They've got guys missing, very important guys. And that's going to affect them. They do have some weapons still because they have great depth, especially at receiver. But I just feel like, you know, the losses of guys like Antonio Brown and, you know, of course, D'Angelo Williams' situation, I think those just they hurt a lot, and it's going to be a very difficult day without him.
No, certainly. Antonio Brown is going to be a huge miss. He was their leading receiver against the Broncos the first time. Not having a key in on him, you could take away a Marcus Wheaton or an Antonio or a Martavis Bryant instead. And we don't even know if Ben Roethlisberger can throw like he normally throws. And if he can't throw downfield, that is a huge element of his game that is gone. You don't have a running game to help you. I just think the Broncos are going to wind up feasting here defensively. The only way I can see this really going one way for the Steelers is if Peyton Manning has another one of those terrible games where he just throws interceptions. Mm-hmm. And it looked like his arm was better because it had rested. But again, you just don't know. You get to Peyton Manning and maybe you rattle him a little bit and he starts throwing ducks and who knows? Yeah, your defense makes a play, maybe a pick six, maybe a fumble return for a touchdown, and that might be all you need. Mm-hmm. Certainly so many different ways that could go in this game. I'll be doing the rabble for it when I get off work on Sunday. So this will be one of this. I'm going to be very interested as I'm doing the game. So
yeah. And, you know, I just want to mention really quickly, I mean, Big Ben is going to be facing a defense that's really tough, and they have a lot to bring to the table. But I feel like the Bengals did too, and they were able to win that game against the Bengals.
But, you know, if you don't have those dumb penalties, they're not winning that game.
Yeah, that's very true. And there's a lot of things that go into these games. But I have to say that, you know, when you're talking about a game like this, you're talking about two teams that pretty know each other pretty well, and they're teams that have had to deal with issues on their offenses. The defense, so much. The Broncos are just better. Let's just be honest. They're just better. But then again, the Steelers are used to getting the big play. So I'm going to go with the Broncos in this one, though. I really feel like that they're going to find a way to win this.
I'm going with the Broncos, too. You know, you're counting on their secondary to do things. Secondary is a problem with the Steelers' defense. And that's, you know, if Peyton Manning can get guys behind him. And let's not forget, too, even though the Steelers are kind of okay against the run, C.J. Anderson has been averaging about, like, almost over 6 yards a carry lately. And, you know, you add in Ronnie Hillman to the mix. I mean, if they can get that running game going, it just makes it so much easier for Peyton Manning. So let's see what happens when we get to that game. But that'll do it here for this episode. You know, that's what we wanted it to be a little bit shorter, just focusing on the big news and then being able to just talk about these games here. Enjoy your Saturday and Sunday, because it'll be the last time we're talking about multiple games on multiple days, because the next time it'll be the championship games, and then it'll be we'll be talking about the Super Bowl. Not a whole lot of football left, Gary.
I know, scary, huh?
The Pro Bowl too. I forgot about that.
But. Yeah, I know that'll be your favorite episode about the Pro Bowl. But I do find that interesting. I know a lot of people don't really respect it, and I'll be honest with you, they have kind of jacked up the Pro Bowl quite a bit. But I think when we get to that episode, I'll be interested in finding out who is going to what team and how they're going to be doing it this year, because I've yet to hear who the teams are going to be, you know, run by. I know we had Michael Irvin last year against, I think it was Jerry Rice, correct? So who's it going to be this year? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, certainly. Well, until on Monday, we'll be back, or Well, can we do it? Maybe even Sunday. Depends on what is going on and everything, but if everybody's around and has been watching the games, we might perhaps be able to do it on Sunday night, right after that last game is over, and be able to discuss it. So, or not after the game's over, but later that night or whatever. But yeah, so we'll see. But we will be back to review these games, talk about them, what we thought, and then moving ahead on that next Thursday to the conference championship games. And if you've enjoyed what you heard here, we're missing Randy. Hopefully, he'll be back the next time we do the podcast. Make sure you go check out everything that's on the W2M Network. You can go subscribe to that on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever there are podcasts now. You can pretty much find it. I've kind of updated that to include some other places, kind of like where we have these shows. TuneIn's still not getting back to me, but they're kind of slow about everything, it seems like. I'm going to have to go find the way to get a hold of them. But other than that, you can find it pretty much everywhere else. We have new podcasts on there now. We have, Randy's podcast is now part of that. Backlog Busting, if you like retro video games and like to hear Randy talking about something else that's not football, he's certainly there. The Running Wild podcast, that's also part of Last Word on Sports like we are. You can hear them on the W2M Network. And, of course, on Sunday night, you'll be hearing Patrick Hudson, Harry Broadhurst doing the Royal Rumble 1992, the last time that the belt was on the line inside the Royal Rumble match. I'll be producing that show, so I'll get some quips here in there. Probably talking more about them, more with them about it, since it's finally something I can actually watch. And, this show, like I said, we'll be back. Rate, review, subscribe on the appropriate places. iTunes, Stitcher helps us out a lot to get that word out. And, if you like wrestling, we just did our Wrestle the Max podcast last night, talking about who we think might win the Royal Rumble. And, Shinsuke Nakamura and his IC titles and that getting that stripped from him and all the other things that have been going on in wrestling. It seems like we just don't have a week where something doesn't happen lately. So,
yeah,
kind of like the NFL right now. But, all right. Enjoy the games, everybody, and we'll see you back here sometime in the near future. Later, everybody.